Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And for this hour, we have with us Lieutenant Colonel Karen Katowski, who actually worked in the Pentagon prior to the time she retired. And I see, of course, doing a fair amount of writing of articles. We've interviewed her on other stations concerning the very real danger of a war with Iran, that there are people in government who really are interested in going to war with Iran, and without ever seemingly being concerned about the possible implications of that war. And, well, this evening we're going to talk about really some of the other things she's been writing about recently. Colonel, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what should we talk? What should we cover this evening? Do you want to cover the possibility of a war with Iran? Your thoughts about what's going on in the military, or what is the burning issue from your point of view?
Oh well, I mean that certainly is one of them, and I think people have to be thinking about this. You know, the president has a lot of things that he says publicly, and there's a mood. Certainly, the mood is one of vacation in Washington. You know, the president is on vacation. The Congress is on vacation, and maybe we can say, well, they're not doing anything, so they're not dangerous. Well, they're very dangerous. The things that we've done leading up to something that would be very, very easy to set off an American attack or an American response to some incident in the Middle East, an attack on Iran, perhaps one of the other countries there. I mean, certainly Pakistan's been in the news. Syria is an eternal enemy. You know, this stuff is possible. And the one thing that concerns me, well, there's a lot of things that concern me in this regard, but a lot of things have been done to kind of pave the way, both in terms of how the American people are thinking about Iran, and we know how they think about Iran. If they listen to the news, Iran is a terrorist state. That's what we are told on a daily basis. In fact, I think there was just some legal definition which defined Iran's regime as a terrorist regime. Well, if it's a terrorist regime, according to George Bush think, he has every right to do anything he wants to it in terms of his conduct of the war on terror. He is not a constrained president in any way, and he still talks very aggressively against Iran. And this, of course, would be something the military would not recover from, American military, I don't think. A very awful thing. So we have to be concerned about that, and we should talk about it a little bit just to remind people. One thing that bothers me, or maybe not bothers me, it's a good thing that Karl Rove is going home to wherever he comes from, but he was the guy that, for a lot of logical reasons, is reported as been the guy that kind of, you know, explained to George Bush that we don't want to expand the war in the Middle East beyond Iraq, which is already a disaster. Karl Rove is telling him why the war in Iran, a future attack on Iran, some escalation of hostilities, more killing of people by Americans, killing of Americans, all this. Rove is telling him, we need to, you know, this is not good. It's not good for this country. It's not good for your own personal politics. It's just not good. Well, Rove's leaving. The guy who's staying, the guy who whispers in the other ear of George Bush, is Dick Cheney. Well, Dick Cheney's off the reservation. He wants to go, you know, he's ready to nuke anybody. And Iran could get the first one, and he'd be very happy, at least according to the kinds of things he states, the statements he makes, the things he's written, and that kind of thing. So Cheney is now not balanced by a guy named Karl Rove.
And
it sounds very strange.
I think this is something we should really be concerned about, and I believe Colonel is exactly right. Well, Karen, go ahead, pick the story up.
Sure. You know, we don't think about Karl Rove as being any kind of a good thing. He certainly has a a bad reputation if you don't support George Bush and some of the things that he's done. But now we have to worry, because at least in terms of escalating the Middle East, making it worse rather than making it better, you know, bringing in more troops rather than removing our troops and bringing them back home where they should be, Rove was actually on that side, at least in terms of what was legitimate for George Bush to hear. He was hearing kind of good things in this regard from Karl Rove. Well, Karl Rove is leaving, and Cheney's singing the same old tune that he was before and showing no signs of weakening. So unless Cheney is somehow indicted or impeached or in some other way kind of brought down a little bit in terms of credibility with George Bush, he's a risk. He's a risk factor. In terms of can George Bush do Iran, attack Iran on his own? Well, he certainly attacked lots of different countries on his own. He is, you know, has developed this unitary executive, this concentration of power. He has cultivated a contempt for Congress, a contempt for the judiciary. Of course he can attack Iran if he wants to. He's done as much with Afghanistan and Iraq. So, you know, that part, he's not really restrained in terms of precedent, at least in his own administration. The Congress is showing, of course, you know, very unpopular Congress. I think only, 14% of the people have a positive view of Congress. Well, that's very, you know, I think that's fair. I think that's, what has this Congress done? You know, has it passed wise laws? Has it served its role in the three-part government that we have, in the balance of government? No, it hasn't done any of those things. So there's no inclination that it would stand up and stop something if George Bush got it into his head that this was okay to attack Iran. So, you know, or even to destabilize Iran, to mess with Iran, to entangle ourselves with Iran. I mean, all of these things. So this most recent thing in the news where Iran has been classified in terms of how the Congress and George Bush look at Iran as a terrorist state. I mean, this is really just one more, you know, nail in a coffin, and not Iran's coffin, because they'll certainly survive any attack that we make. But ours, our own, our republic's coffin. You know, this is, you know, it was, they always talk about, you know, the compare America to the old Roman Empire. And of course, we're much better than them, much more moral than the Roman Empire, of course. But we never learned any of those lessons. You know, we overextend, and every step away around the world to dominate, which is what we seem to like to do. And certainly, George Bush has made lots of points, political points, in doing that.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that for just a moment as we bring our stations back on board here. Well, Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kowalski basically was talking about, you know, how, although many people do not like Karl Rove, I among them, and I'm sure Karen Kowalski as well, but at least he was a moderating influence and was saying the last thing we want to do is go to war with Iran, and of course it was Dick Cheney who's been pushing to go to war with Iran, so we have a real problem, and certainly the Congress is not going to stand up against the President. They actually had, in some of their defense appropriations bills, amendments there that said, under no circumstances can any of the money that we're appropriating be utilized to attack Iran, and they took those amendments out. So from that point of view, they certainly gave the President permission to attack Iran. Then, of course, just before the Senate went on their vacation, when they passed a resolution, I think it was 97-0, to condemn Iran for complicity in supplying these explosive devices that were killing our young men. And then now, of course, they want to, the Bush administration wants to declare the Republic Guard, which is a very important part of the Iranian government, they want to declare them a terrorist organization. So everything is being done, I believe, leading up to the war with Iran, which is the last thing I think Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kowalski really wants is to see a war with Iran, and yet everything points that that's the way we're going. So go right ahead now.
Yeah, you know, you summed it up perfectly and far better than I could. It's the Republican Guard, the elite military forces of Iran that we have declared a terrorist group. Now, can you imagine if some other country, I don't know, Iraq, declared our occupying army as a terrorist group, as a legitimate target, because it was using violence to inspire fear and to shape a population's opinion, or you know, to make them act in a certain way. I mean, you know, it's just incredible. And I do think that the administration has learned from the things they did wrong in leading us to and entering into the war in Iraq. You know, they lied. They told stories. Well, guess what? Truth comes out. Truth comes out in the end. And it was embarrassing, I think, even for Cheney, who continues to, I think, spin some of these same lies about Iraq, just as he's doing with Iran. But with Iran, with the preparation for legitimizing some sort of American military strike against Iran, they've done it in a very wise manner. They haven't really lied. What they've done is kind of had statements made that very publicly key players are on board with, key players being the Congress, okay, the Senate and the House, key players being, the candidates that are running for president, for the most part, both Democrats and Republicans. They haven't taken, I think, both the Republican, the neoconservative Republican candidates, which is all of them except Ron Paul, these guys have embraced the possibility and the justness of some sort of attack on Iran, and the Democrat candidates have done the exact same thing. I don't think, maybe Edwards is not so positive about attacking Iran, but I think all of them have said, it's on the table, it's open, we would never step away from that if we had to do it. And, you know, of course, the philosophical question that Americans should be asking, or maybe a practical question, is why do we need to... You know, I mean, we've always been told when you dig a hole, you realize it. First thing I do, stop digging. But instead, our foreign policy is precisely the opposite. But anyway, the politicians seem to want to do it. They've made statements that are very public. You know, you can't say anyone wove a story and kind of put something over on something. The Congress themselves, like you mentioned right before they went on break, you know, passed this resolution. Well, the military, the elite military of Iran, is a terrorist group. Well, over to you, Mr. President, whatever you want to do. What do you normally do for terrorist groups? Well, you know, we bomb them. It's all set. I think it's something we should be concerned about. I do believe that the military leadership is concerned about it. We've had a couple of things happen in the last 6 months where people in Washington, even in the Pentagon, have said something like, oh, you know, we should do this, we should do that, Iran is doing this and Iran is doing that, they're the evil enemy at this moment. And then guys in the field, the admiral that runs Central Command, other guys out there are saying, wait a minute, no, actually, you know. So there's some dissent, I think, in the senior ranks in the field, because they, I think, are more aware, well, I know they are, more aware of the repercussions of attacking a country like Iran. And certainly there's never an intention, any desire or capability on our part to occupy a country like Iran. So what we're really trying to do is just kill people. You know, we just want to kill some people. It makes us feel better. It's all being normalized here at home. It's being normalized. And I think with the departure of Rove, it's actually a bad sign, and I never thought I would say such a thing, because I think Rove is kind of a lousy guy.
Well, at least maybe he may have been a source of some moderation, because, of course, you know, the idea, you know, that we just have to go to war, and I would say, why do we have to go to war? The CIA, our own intelligence agencies, say it's going to be 5 to 10 years before Iran will have the ability to make even a small nuclear device, and yet we're told, oh, my goodness, no, they could have one any day. Now we've got other sources of information, but if it's not coming from our intelligence agencies, where is the information coming from? And if we can't depend upon our intelligence agencies, why do we even have them?
Well, that's true, and they've proven themselves to be unreliable throughout many, many years, not just recently, not just in terms of, you know, Iraq. They've been wrong. They were wrong on everything. They were wrong on the Soviet Union. You know, Reagan, to go back too far, but, you know, Reagan believed in his heart and what he understood about economics and social relations. You know, he believed and understood rightfully that communist systems will collapse. They are unsustainable. And he had great belief in the people in straightening out their system. And he was right. And the CIA, of course, which had invested all of this, their infrastructure and their bureaucracy and their credibility in a great, powerful, and Pentagon too, a great, powerful Soviet Union, something we should be all frightened of and spend more and more. You know, in fact, it was a shadow of what the CIA imagined it to be in terms of both military capability and in terms of economic capability. Reagan was right. His gut feeling was right. He understood, you know, systems of government. He understood liberty and people's desire for it. And he had faith that the system wasn't nearly as strong as what the CIA had projected. But the CIA was dead wrong on the Soviet Union, and they didn't predict the collapse. And people that read the CIA documents and believed them without critical thinking, you know, they were all wrong. Very few people, you know, saw that coming. And so the CIA, I mean, I hate to say this, the people there, I'm sure, are working hard and they're patriots. But, you know, you can't have much respect for it as an organization. You really can't. It makes for good spy novels and movies, but, you know, in terms of investment, it's not where you should put your money, I don't think. Unless they've changed. And I didn't know about it.
Well, there are a lot of things going on that, you know, the American people are just being so misled by so much of the propaganda that's being put out now. They give us a sense of urgency. Oh, my goodness, we've got to attack Iran very soon, but it's going to be a real easy war, maybe a 6-7 day war, and then we can all go home and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they almost, I think Americans, like any people, you know, we have a lot on our minds. You know, we're not thinking about foreign policy all the time. You know, I teach at a public school, and I was talking to a lady yesterday there, and her daughter works in the Navy, and she's been in Iraq 3 times. She's been kind of in bases behind, you know, not like in danger zones or anything. She does computer work. And, you know, she told me, well, you know, the Iraqis that my daughter works with, they just love us. They are just so grateful. You know, they're so happy. And I told her, well, you know, the Iraqis that are working with us are seen as collaborators. You know, they're the Vichy branch of Iraq. And they are in danger if we leave. And we're going to have to do something. Legitimately, we are going to have to bring those folks into a safe zone, probably back here. Probably grant them asylum, much as we did some of the South Vietnamese who had worked with us. But the 98% of the Iraqis want us gone. You know, we're an occupying force. And I explained to her that, you know, her daughter certainly has a bit of the truth, and she should believe her daughter. But I said, you know, I worked in the Pentagon, you know, 2 levels below Rumsfeld, in the office, it's doing this lies and the planning and the propaganda. I said, we spun a war. We spun it up. We made something that was never justified, that was never legal. Because somebody, I'm not sure yet still who, somebody wanted it. And, you know, that doesn't, if you start off on an, and she was not fazed by that, though. She said, well, what matters is some Iraqis are grateful. Well, you know, we want to believe what we want to believe, what makes us feel comfortable. And what I told her made her feel uncomfortable. So it's very, you know, understandable why Americans don't want to really look at it, you know, in the face. About some of the things that we've been doing. Certainly Iraq, the bad side of, you know, the ramifications of attacking Iran or otherwise expanding this war in the Middle East, the ramifications of a permanent military presence in the Middle East. You know, what is that about? You know, Americans don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, really, I think that most Americans think that we're just going to, well, when we leave, we're going to pull out, and we have no intention of pulling out.
No.
We've not built the massive facilities that we have there. And if you read the plan, if you want to read it, you can go to the www.newamericancentury.org, and this is the plan of the neoconservatives, and it's written out in something called Rebuilding America's Defenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's
absolutely
Rebuilding America's Defenses. And it tells you, we're going to have a permanent presence there. It doesn't matter whether Saddam's in power or not. We are going to have a permanent presence in the Middle East. And that's what it's really all about. Just like we have a permanent presence in Germany, 60 years after the Second World War ended, and permanent presence in Japan, 60 years after the Second World War ended, and permanent presence in South Korea, 50 years after the Vietnam War ended, and most Americans never think of that.
Yeah.
They don't really understand the foundation of America's foreign policy. We love America, but there's some people there that in positions of power who have a different worldview.
Absolutely.
Well, you go right ahead.
Sure. It is true. And the thing that I don't get is why the rest, why most of Americans who are paying for it all. Now, we pay for
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
This is occupying forces, and but of course we're really not going to pull out. We can't tell the American people the real objective. I mean, we never talk and ask, why are we still occupying Germany? I mean, after all, we were occupied after the Second World War because of the threat of communism, but supposedly communism is no longer a threat, so why are we occupying it, and why are we occupying Japan when, of course, you know, communism is longer threat. Are we occupying it to protect us from communist China? Well, no, we're building up communist China. So what are the real objectives? I mean, you tell the American people one thing, but you never tell the people the truth. They're incapable of understanding the more noble and lofty ideas of the people who really run America. Well, certainly, Colonel, as we look and see what's happening on the political field, it seems that almost all of the candidates, Democrat or Republicans, are supporting this idea that we're involved in a just war. And I certainly, the evangelical Christian element of our country is rallying behind this war because it is a just war. And, of course, it's all right to kill people as long as you're fighting a just war. But, mm-hmm. I mean, there's certainly one of the political candidates, and that's Congressman Ron Paul, who, when asked, of course, what's the biggest moral problem facing America today, his reply was the idea that we're involved in a just war in the Middle East. Do you want to comment on Congressman Paul and the fact that he was the only person there, really, who really took a strong position against the war in the Middle East? And, of course, he was immediately attacked by all of the commentators. I mean, how dare you say that? Why, that you don't even have a Republican attitude. All the Republicans are in favor of the war. And I wonder how many Republicans listen to this program are really in favor of this war. I'm sure some of them are, but I think there are probably a lot of people out there, both Democrats and Republicans, the vast majority of people in America, really aren't happy about what's going on. So what are your thoughts about the political situation today?
Well, certainly Ron Paul is an honest man, and he's a wise man, and he's a well-informed man. So you put all those things together, there's nothing he can say except what he says, which is the truth. And the fact that Americans are confused, that they are saying this is, that some of them may feel that this is a just war in some way. I mean, there's a lot of guys that had been fighting in Iraq for 2 years off and on, soldiers, who thought, ignorant guys, unfortunately, who thought that Iraq had actually attacked us on 9/11. These are soldiers that they get, you know, you think they should be somewhat well-informed. They're fighting. They ought to know why they're fighting. They've gone two tours before they realized, actually, that, no, Iraq never attacked us. Not at all. just weird stuff that we're told. So it's understandable why people would buy into a just war concept. Certainly that's what Washington is selling us from both sides of the political aisle. But, in fact, it doesn't meet those criteria. It doesn't meet the criteria at all in terms of for their Christian evangelicals, although they seem to like this idea and embrace it. A true Christian, of course, turns the other cheek. So regardless of who attacked us, you know, this kind of angry, unbalanced, overboard type of response. I mean, we've killed a million Iraqis. What did they do to us? None of them didn't do anything to us. We've killed a million of them. And we're not done yet. We are not finished yet. This is not a just war. Oh, how many of us have they killed? Oh, well, you know, a little less than 5,000. Iraqis certainly had nothing to do with the 9/11 thing, so you can't credit them with that 3,000. We have a lot of wounded folks. Sure. We got 50,000, wounded. We got a lot of mental problems coming back. But we killed a million of them so far, and we're not finished yet. There's no justness in that at all. There's no rational logic for it. Lies were the foundation. Greed was the motivation. A good Christian would never be able to justify this. In fact, a good Christian, and many good Christians out there, are railing against this occupation of Iraq for all of the right moral reasons. So, you know, that part's kind of strange. In terms of, free market, our values, liberty, trade, this war has nothing to do with that. Occupation is a form of theft. Okay, and that's what we're doing. So where's the justness? And it seems to me very easy for people to understand, and I think that many Americans of all political flavors are against this war for a number of reasons. Some are against this war because they are religious and they actually try to practice their religion, whether that's Christian or Judaism or Islam or any other, Buddhism.
I'm going to interrupt you there. We're going to be back in just a moment. We'll welcome your calls here, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kotowski, and of course she has worked in the Pentagon. They're there at the highest levels of the military, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you're out there and you have a question for the Colonel. And Sidney, what is your belief? What, how do you think the military feels? Sidney, not the the generals, but you know, Sidney, the majors, colonels, lieutenant colonels, captains. I mean, the people who are out there actually risking their lives. My understanding, you know, as I'm reading about what's going on, is that we've got young men who are back there for the third rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to go, and they, you know, many of them even were in reserve or National Guard units that never signed up for this sort of prolonged fighting, and yet, of course, they're being forced to go, and they're mm-hmm. being forced to stay longer than the 12 months, and they want to get out when their term is expired, the length of time they signed up for, they're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's really going on?
Well, you know, we're treating our volunteer military as a bunch of high-level mercenaries for the elites in Washington that somehow think that this was a great idea and somehow think that this constitutes something they can sell as a just war. In fact, of course, it's not just, and the folks that go over to Iraq see that. They see it every day. You know, they see it when they go in there with good intentions and they fix a school building only to find, you know, that it's destroyed the next day. They see it when they realize the Iraqis have no clean water to drink and haven't had it, that they're dying of disease and malnutrition. They see it when they find that their units and people that they know have gotten in situations where they've had to shoot innocent people and kill them or run over them with their vehicles. This hardening of their own sense of right and wrong, this kind of coarsening of their moral acuity, I mean, this is what they're seeing, and so they're drawing the right conclusions. That they're mercenaries. They didn't sign up to be mercenaries, but that's what they're being treated as. So certainly, yeah. I mean, I think most of the guys over there that have any sense, and this would be your lieutenant colonels and your majors particularly, and your enlisted men, they understand that this is not a war for any of the reasons that George Bush says it is, and that means it's not a just war. And people, I think good people everywhere don't want to be involved in things that aren't justifiable in their own minds. So we got a big problem. But again, we're seeing people avoiding service in one way or another. But we're not seeing mass defections really. A lot of these military, of course, it's an all volunteer military. They're told that by their supervisors when they voice their concerns, hey, you signed up for it, you don't have a choice.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kotowski. Do you have a website or any place people can get some of the articles you've written?
Most of the articles that I've written are in lewrockwell.com in his archives.
Lou who?
Lewrockwell.com. It's LewRockwell.com.
Excellent website. Lewrockwell.com. It's a libertarian website.
It's a great website. He features lots and lots of people that have very interesting perspectives, and just a wonderful thing. You can sign up for the email listing, and 6 days a week you can get a set of 10 very well selected articles. He's got archives of all his different columnists, and so if you look there, my stuff's there as well.
All right, fine. So if you'd like to get to Colonel Kotowski's writings, why is it you'll find them at lewrockwell.com. That's L-E-W. Rockwell, rockwell.com, and certainly people have actually copied those and then sent them to me, and I think you'll find her writings are very clear and concise, and I think they reflect the attitude of many of the people within the military who realize that we're destroying our own military and by sending them for prolonged service in a war that we're not being allowed to win. And it drags on and on and on. Remember, we've been fighting in Iraq longer than we fought during the Second World War. And you have to ask yourself, why? Well, I don't think most people want to think about that. We'd far rather be concerned about, you know, how the football season is going to line up this year and how many more home runs Barry Bonds going to hit. And certainly, you know, what Paris Hilton's next escapade is going to be. Rather than what's happening to the lives of so many of the young men we're sending halfway around the world to fight for freedom as we're losing our freedom here at home. Well, are you concerned about some of the things that are happening as it seems that we be moving away from a free society almost into a police state in the name of fighting terrorism?
Yeah, I think, and it's not just me, because I'm not that smart on, you know, the kinds of things that have eaten into the freedoms that we are, our God-given freedoms that the government is mandated by the First Ten Amendments to stay off of, you know. A lot of people think the Bill of Rights gives you rights. It's like, oh, here's a Bill of Rights, and the government gave you the Bill of Rights, gave you these rights, you know, and there's the implicit assumption that they might take them away, but that's not what it was at all. The founders said, look, people have rights when they're born, you know, as people. They have rights. Not as Americans, as people, as human beings. They have rights. And the government needs to keep its paws off of those rights. And so, you know, this was the whole kind of the thing of the anti-federalists, and they insisted upon these first 10 amendments to the Constitution because they figured, you know, governments tend to consolidate their power and expand their power, and they tend not to restrain themselves. They do what they can get away with doing. And this is their understanding of government, and it certainly was. It proved to be accurate. It was accurate then. It's accurate now. So they wouldn't sign on to this new country until it was recognized that the government had to get their paws off of God-given or Creator-given rights. And so that's what it's about. And yet we so complacently lay down as these rights are nickeled and dimed. And it's not the first time. George Bush certainly, doesn't really hold the record. I mean, Woodrow Wilson, Lincoln, Roosevelt. I mean, lots of these guys, these big power, unitary executive type presidents and very supportive congresses that they had at different times have eaten away at our rights. And so Americans have become, you know, sometimes we're called sheep. Well, we've become a little bit like sheep. We look to government to protect us. We look to government to preserve our rights. The government's never going to do anything but take them away. So it can preserve them. We have to preserve them. We have to insist upon them. We need to understand why, you know, we have a Bill of Rights. And I think the big problem is Americans don't have a clue why we have a Bill of Rights. And they think government's going to take care of us. And if government says they got to listen in on our phone calls and monitor our emails, you know, and make us take our shoes off all the time, you know, and delay us and fine us and arrest us and incarcerate us in order to keep us safe. Well, if we're going to say that, we deserve what we get. It's very concerning. I think, you know, part of this, I hate to blame the public education system, but I got to. You know, we have not raised multiple generations, many generations. You know, my grandparents may be the last ones. My parents, my mother. Well, George Bush is a good guy, and he's probably trying to, you know, he's doing the best he can. He's a moral man, so he wouldn't do anything immoral. That's what she says. Republican. Same as I was brought up. Brought up Republican. You know? George Bush is a good guy. We can trust the government. Well, where'd that come from, you know? That's not how the founders thought.
And I think it's so important that our listeners understand that the men who created the United States were predominantly Christians. And they felt, they believed that men and women were basically evil. You could never trust them with power. And because they knew that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, why they wanted to create a nation where the power of the government was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution. And what the Bill of Rights did was to limit the power of government. And that's what it was all about. Mm-hmm. Because our rights, we were endowed with our freedoms from God, by our Creator. And the purpose of government was to preserve our God-given rights. And that's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. To preserve these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their power from the acceptance of the public. So people don't understand that anymore. You can never trust government because you could never find people who are worthy of trust. People will always betray you if given the chance. And we try to do our best, and we hope that our religious conviction will lead us in the right direction, but sometimes even the best motivated men, with all of the right purposes, will, of course, betray their trust. Mm-hmm. That's why our founding fathers did not want to get us involved in foreign wars. That's why our founding fathers wanted to limit the power of the central authority over the lives of the people. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call, you have a question for Colonel Katowski, who's certainly been there. She's worked with in the centers of power. And when did you actually leave the Pentagon?
I left the Pentagon basically the same week that we entered Iraq.
Okay.
I was there for the run-up, but not for the execution part.
Well, I'm sure it must be very, very discouraging for many, many people who've given their lives to our country and been in the military to see what's going on today and to see the way our troops are being used and slaughtered there in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And, of course, many of them are simply exhausted and that are being... sent back again without their consent, and sent back again and again and again. This is the tragedy.
Well, you know what? We can hope that at some point some of these folks rediscover another great Marine from years and years ago, Lieutenant General Smedley Butler, who he experienced this. And Butler was a 3-star Marine, career Marine, very warrior, all the characteristics of the Marine warrior. And he conducted and led and executed a number of Washington-directed wars, turn of the century, and certainly the occupation of the Philippines was a big one that kind of over time, and World War One as well. And he'd seen these things, and he felt kind of like a mercenary by the time he was done. And he wrote War is a Racket, a little essay you can get on the Internet called War is a Racket. You can just look it up or look up Smedley Butler and find out what he had to say in 1934, I think it was, looking back over the things he had experienced. And so, I hate to not pick on George Bush, but certainly George Bush can't take credit for being the first unitary executive. He can't take credit for being the first guy who thought, hey, a great way to get some popularity is to go kill some foreign enemies or to civilize some foreign people that need Americanization, whether it's the Philippines that needed to be converted to Protestantism, or the Muslims that need to be introduced to American-style democracy. We'll help them. We'll hold their hand while they do that. Well, it's just a game. It's a ploy, and it concentrates power. Of course, war always. Who is it? The guy. War is the health of the state. War always increases and centralizes power at home. One of the few times we had rationing in this country was under World War II. And, of course, a lot of folks still remember that or have heard stories about that.
I remember it very well. But I remember also what Lindbergh's father said. He said those who go overseas to fight for freedom may very well find that we're losing it here at home. And for those who'd like to read Smedley Butler's essay entitled War is a Racket, if you just go to Google and Google in Radio Liberty, Smedley Butler, or General Butler, and we actually, one of my newsletters, I simply reproduced exactly what he wrote. A very brave and courageous man. So that's certainly, just Google in Radio Liberty, Butler, or General Smedley Butler. Well, let's go to Rob, who's calling us from Washington. Hi, Rob. Do you have a question or comment?
Oh, yes, Dr. Stan. Darren, I've enjoyed your columns on LouRockland.com for a long time now, and also Ron Paul's columns. I think Ron Paul could very well be the next president of the United States, but he made the comment as far as getting out of Iraq, we just marched in, we can just march out. And I was wondering, as a military person, what you think the consequences would be in the Middle East if he did that.
All right, fine. So the question then would be, what would happen if we just picked up and left Iraq tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't think we know what would happen, and I also don't think that all of the dire stories that are put out by the American Enterprise Institute or the administration are in any way more valid than the very opposite type of story. Now, we didn't just march in. One thing that surprised me, and I'll share this with you, I talked to a guy, this was in February, mid-February, shortly before we went in, 2003, shortly before we went into Iraq. I hadn't seen him in a while. He was a Navy captain in the Pentagon, and I hadn't seen him. And I hadn't seen him in 8 months. And I said, I used to see him all the time in the hallway, and I hadn't seen him. So I ran into him. I said, hey, where you been? He said, I'm working over in the Navy staff. And I said, what you been doing in the Navy staff for the last 9-10 months, since I've not seen you that long? And he goes, yeah. He said, we've been deploying into the Middle East. We've been shipping in all kinds of things that we're going to need for this. The war plan started the previous spring of 2002, long before George Bush and Dick Cheney started spinning their lies, you know, and publicizing it and building up this war, you know, the drumbeat for war. It took the Navy a long, long time to move their stuff in. And as we remember with the first Gulf War, we spent a long time moving stuff in. So it's not march in and march out. But as we marched in, we can march out. We can pull out. And the other thing is we don't have to take back everything we left there. You know, one of the suggestions I had in an article is use our fighter jets on their last flight out to blow up the stuff we built. And we didn't build it. Halliburton built it. And the Congress paid for it on Chinese money. So what do you want? You know, I think it's very, very possible. Now, morally, what do we owe the Iraqis? Well, for the 98% that don't want us there, that would like to have some fresh water and some reliable electricity, and they'd like to take care of their oil fields and get some contracts that are legitimately competed, you know, for those Iraqis, they're not going to be hurt at all. They're going to be very happy. That's 98%. The 2% that have been collaborating with us, we owe them something, okay? Just like the South Vietnamese, we owe them something. So we're going to have to arrange to bring them to safety, to give them something to help them restart their lives, because they will not be able to live safely in a post-occupation Iraq. And quite frankly, they don't live safely in an occupation Iraq. These are the targets. Many of the people that are targeted Iraqi on Iraqi violence are Iraqis that want the occupation to end, against those Iraqis that are perceived as working with us. So there's nothing but good that will come from us correcting this mistake by leaving. Nothing but good will come from that. Do we need to plan for it? Sure. Do we need to be moral about it? Yes, we do. There are people we have corrupted in a way. There's people that we've misled. Iraqi people. And these Iraqis deserve some of our protection since we screwed it up for them so bad. Yeah. But no, we can leave. We can leave. As we went in, we can leave. No doubt about it. And the military knows how to do that. The military knows how to take 10 months to get ready for an invasion. Okay? And they know how to take less than 10 months to leave it. In fact, you all remember the pictures of how we left South Vietnam. Not very pretty. Didn't take 10 months.
And I would say, Rob, that people say, if we leave, there's going to be chaos. Well, as long as we're there, there's going to be chaos.
Mm-hmm.
If they say, if we leave, there's going to be killing. Well, if we stay there, there's going to be killing. What we should have done, of course, long ago, was to divide the country into a Shia area, a Sunni area, and the Kurd area, and let each one decide their own future,
Yep. And
let them decide it among themselves. I will tell
Absolutely.
You that when the British had a mandate for Palestine, and they were going to go ahead and they knew there was going to be a conflict between the Arabs and the Jews. What did the British do? Why, they just picked up and pulled out and let them fight, and within about 2 or 3 weeks, why, they had a truce, and of course, there have been problems since then, but there have been long periods where there has been no fighting at all. Maybe if we just pulled out, the fighting would stop.
Yeah, and actually, you know, the example of Israel is a good one. Because one of the reasons that the fighting hasn't stopped is that there's a lot of interference on both sides, a lot of aid. And we just signed, it, I think, an $80 billion over the next 10 years, some sort of huge defense collaboration, you know, deal with Israel. Well, Israel's a little teeny tiny country with anywhere from 200 to 400 nuclear weapons, okay? They're not members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They're not accountable. Nobody gets to inspect their weapons, but they've publicly admitted, at least some members of their government, that they have them. So they're a very well-armed, little tiny, dinky country with a socialist economy, and they're dependent on handouts, pretty much. I mean, their economy doesn't work very well. It depends to a great extent on handouts. Now, they do make some money on some of the things that they do, but our own American interference with Israel actually helps feed the conflict. So, you know, your analogy is actually better than it could be. If we'd leave them alone, they could resolve their differences. Okay?
Well,
they could make their truces.
I think they'd be better off without us as an ally.
I think you're probably right. Hey, Rob, okay. Going to have to let you go. God bless. And
keep it up, guys.
Thanks so much. Bruce, you have a quick question for...
Well, all right. Is it Ruth?
It's Dr. Carrot, Lieutenant Colonel Carrot.
Oh, definitely. Okay. No, I was in Iraq too, and I was once you get off the so-called beaten path of your base, you're just astounded by the devastation that we inflicted on those people, and they're absolutely right. There's no infrastructure left whatsoever. It's hand to mouth from day to day, and it's a shame to be an American a troop over there. To see what you've done to those people.
Well, of course, our boys are brave. They're fighting. They're doing the best. But we're just never going to.
We destroyed it and left it, and then made sure that they can't build it up there, so they can't even build it back up.
Right.
Well, some people would say that was one of the neoconservatives' vision for Iraq, to really destroy it.
It meant to disenhearten them, to demoralize them, so they could be.
We're going to have to interrupt here. Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sydney. Thanks very much for calling, Bruce. Appreciate so much your calling in. Anything you want to say before we let you go?
No, I'll just let her go. It's just hope and pray we don't invade Iran.
Please do everything you can to help us get the word out that this is where this laying
insanity.
Ourselves over.
Absolutely insanity. Absolutely insanity if it is.
God bless.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
And, Colonel, I certainly want to thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest has been Lieutenant Colonel Karen Katowski. You've got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program. What are your parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners all across America, all across the world?
We have got some bad situations on our hands, and we've got some bad leadership in Washington. But I have to say that, one thing that gives me hope is Ron Paul's candidacy. As a conservative, as a true conservative, running for the presidency and participating in those debates and talking to people and his writings, he's very clear. He understands how things work and he understands the Constitution. You know, he's a wonderful educator, and that gives me hope because I think he's touches a lot of people. Very popular guy. In fact, the straw poll, I don't even think in Iowa revealed everything. Initially, they said he was fifth, and now he's third. You know, before we know it, some around. You know, I mean, this guy is popular, and he's popular because he speaks the truth, and he gives us a little bit of hope for. Because it's very depressing if you think about all of this in terms, like as Bruce said, you know, the damage that we've done. There is no. Where's the good in any of that? You know, it's very difficult to find it, and it all comes back on us, and we paid for it. American taxpayers paid for this, and we sustain it, and our Congress keeps paying for it, and keeps. Sustaining this evil, really. And Ron Paul, I think, I encourage all the listeners to Google him or go to ronpaul2008.com. Find out what he's saying, because I think it can give you some hope. And, we can reach back into our own political roots, back to both the anti-federalists and the federalists, too, because the federalists themselves would be appalled at what they would see today if they were alive. So there's a little glimmer of hope. We can do the right thing. We can learn and become educated about how our tax dollars are being spent, and we should. That's part of being a citizen. So, there's a little hope there, but we have to stay vigilant.
Well, of course, we do have a voice, and, of course, lots of people that through the miracle of Internet and shortwave and certainly the alternative radio, and, of course, there are lots of people doing what we're doing. And I think more and more Americans are beginning to wake up. At least we have to hope and pray they will. Colonel, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure to have you with us again.
Well, same here. Thanks for having me.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly it's a real pleasure. We've had Colonel Katowski with us before on a Saturday program, and we hope to have her again on some of our other programs. She has been there in the centers of power, committed her life. She's retired now from the military and concerned about what's happening to America. And I hope you heard, of course, the conversation with the man who had been there in Iraq and had seen the total devastation. And I simply asked anyone in the listening audience, I mean, certainly America had no sooner taken over, you know, this government than, of course, Paul Bremer was sent over by the Council on Foreign Relations and the people who really run America, not answerable to the American people, and dissolved the Iraqi army, the Iraqi police force, the Iraqi civil service, closed down the factories. What do you think would happen in New York City? If we moved into New York and we, first of all, we fired all the policemen and all the firemen, and then we of course, fired all the civil servants, so there wasn't any electricity or sewage or water, and then we closed down all the businesses so that there were no jobs. What do you think would happen in New York City if we were to do that and there was no structure of government other than, you know, a military, which was hopelessly inadequate to maintain law and order and not trained to do it? What do you think would happen? Exactly what our visible government wanted to happen, and that was chaos. And that way we could justify staying, and our boys would continue fighting a no-win war, because I believe what we're doing is it's Vietnam all over again. Now, if you'd like to really understand what's going on, you have to understand the past, because those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. You need to get our little pamphlet. It's called The Communist-Capitalist Alignment. It's my March, April, May, and June newsletters. We put them together in a pamphlet, and they're available from Radio Liberty. You can go up on the Internet and pull the articles down at RadioLiberty.com, as you can get them in pamphlet form, and we would encourage you, of course, to get large numbers of those which are available through Radio Liberty and circulate them. That's The Communist-Capitalist Alignment. You will learn that the United States government has been financing Russia since 1917, and of course communism doesn't work, and so we kept it in power. And then you'll be surprised to learn that the reason that Russia today is the largest producer of oil and natural gas in the world and is able to build all these wonderful pipelines is because of your tax money and the tax money from American and money from American corporations and businesses and banks. And why would we be creating the best enemy that money could buy again when suddenly Russia is beginning to rise again as an enemy and starting their long-term military flights and providing weapons to Iran and Syria that are going to be used against American soldiers in the coming war with Iran if it does happen? Why would we do that from a logical point of view? Well, that is, of course, why you need to read my material on the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available in book form or DVD. The Forbidden Secret, which, of course, is the talk we give that takes you into the understanding of the other dimension and the secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years by the secret societies. And there is a syllabus for that that I hope you'll want to get along with it. And then, of course, the DVD on the Atlantis Connection. And if you want to get the book, The Atlantis Connection, you want to get a book written by Manly P. Hall, you have to request it specifically by name because it's not certainly in our catalog. It's called The Secret Destiny of America. The Secret Destiny of America. It will tell you that for thousands of years, secret societies have been planning upon bringing democracy to the world. Bringing democracy to the world. And this book was written back in 1944. Long before our current situation. And certainly you want to get Randy P. Hall's other books, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. Well, again, the number 1-800-544-8927. You need to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, this evening for this hour, we're going to have Jack McLan with Aid and Abet newsletter, certainly formerly with the Phoenix Police Department, the most highly decorated police officer they've ever had there, until he began talking about the Constitution and the fact that police officers had to obey the Constitution just like everybody else. And that didn't make it very popular there in Phoenix, did it, Jack?
No, brother, it sure did not. My career potential ended when I started talking to my fellow officers about saying no to immoral and unlawful orders. It pretty much went in the dumper after that.
Well, anyway, of course, how long have you been there publishing Aid and Abet newsletter now?
Almost 28 years now, 27 and a half right now, and so we're coming up on our 28th year.
And, of course, Jack, of course, sends his newsletter out to the military, to the police officers across America, and an awful lot of them read it, and those who read it begin to understand that they are simply being exploited and used by people who have a different agenda, who would use our military and our police, not, of course, to preserve our freedom, but, of course, to restrict our freedom. Do you think that more and more of the police and military really understand the power structure and how they're using our police and military?
Well, brother, yes, more and more all the time. It's amazing now. We have family members that send us letters where their soldiers, brothers and sisters and sons and daughters are sending letters home saying, what are we doing here fighting for freedom for these Iraqis and these Muslims when I hear we're losing our freedoms at home? And so many of the soldiers are beginning to see that something is definitely wrong. I told you last week that many of our soldiers have returned, and we've had seven of them now, maybe eight at this count, who's returned and told us that they were told and ordered to kill men, women, and children, non-combatants, and it didn't set right with them. Some of them stood up and objected to it and said no, and they also tell us that these mercenary private contractors are killing hundreds and hundreds of men, women, and children there to keep this civil war going, or to cause a civil war, we were told at first. Now they're blowing up hundreds of people at a time to keep the civil war going there. The international criminal elite in our government had written about getting a civil war going there so that the Iraqi people could never come back together and be a force to be reckoned with. So they got these private contractors to, our government pays them $100,000 or more a year to dress up as Sunnis and go blow up the Shiites, and dress as Shiites and go blow up the Sunnis. And our soldiers are coming home and telling us these things, and they're very disenfranchised and very upset that this is going on. And a lot of our soldiers, brothers, coming home mentally upset. They can't sleep at night because they get these pictures of the little kids they had to execute, and mothers and dads that weren't doing anything but hiding in their home. One sergeant told us that their captain told him to bomb a house, that he saw movement in the house with his FLIR radar type glasses he had, picking up heat temperatures and people moving around, and they set up the mortar and they were going to mortar the house, and the mortar didn't work. And praise God, then the man carrying his little baby and his wife with two other babies came out of the house.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Jack, you go ahead. I mean, they came out of the house, and so they were not killed.
No, they weren't killed. But on many occasions, they do bomb those houses and kill the families in those homes. And, of course, brother, what this causes is the neighbors and relatives turn into freedom fighters then against our troops. Because, if somebody came into our country here and killed your family and some of my 9 grandchildren, man, I would pick up a gun and go after those troops that were doing that to my family. No problem with it. Of course, I'm an old soldier and an old cop now, but still, most people will react back at a force that's coming in and killing the non-combatants in a war area, you know.
So well, but do you think, though, that, of course, one reason our military is doing this is because they're frightened, because there might be terrorists in the house, they're trying to protect our troops, so they're quite willing to sacrifice even civilians in the name of protecting our own troops?
Well, we've had a major in the Army tell us that the plan is to eradicate as many Arabs and Iraqis as they can, so that they can easily take over those areas and you know, eliminate half the population. So it's not because they're scared that there's insurgents in the house. It seems to be, and we've heard this before, that they're trying to kill as many Arabs as they can so there's not so many around. And they don't have to enslave, all the Arabs if they kill half of them. And then they're, of course, putting the depleted uranium in the ground to poison the women, so they don't have babies anymore. They have these horribly deformed babies over there, and that'll last forever because they're not cleaning up the mess. And so, but our soldiers are coming home sick too with it. My wife is Gulf War I victim of DU poisoning and has the Gulf War sickness even now, and she was in the war over there in 1991, was fed the horrible anthrax vaccines that turned her into a cripple in about 3 weeks. She was running about 3 miles a day, and then she couldn't hardly walk in the next couple months and almost died, as 14-some thousand of our troops did die from the first Gulf War. So anyway, but to answer the question, yeah, more of our soldiers are waking up than ever before. And that's the same with law enforcement, too, because a lot of our law enforcement officers we've talked to for 27 years, some of them are still there and moved up through the ranks. And
hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment with Jack. Right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jack McClam of the Aid in the Back newsletter. And Jack has been publishing his newsletter almost 30 years now and trying to educate the servicemen, trying to educate the police, that there really are a group of people who run the country, who control both political parties, whose loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream of a one-world order, a one-world religion, and, of course, the coming world leader. And that these people, of course, are involved in war after war after war, needless wars, because, of course, you fight wars to bring about peace. That's logical, isn't it? And, well, anyway, Jack is just telling us that, hey, you know, that some of the soldiers are coming home and telling them that they are ordered many times to kill defenseless men, women, and children, and they object to it, and certainly they try not to. But, you know, when you're given a direct order, there seems to be a very much a lack of concern for human life over there. And, of course, sometimes it may be done to protect our troops. Other times, Jack feels that they really want, there are certain people who want to kill. We have this in the mercenaries. We've even had stories about the mercenaries saying, I'm just going to kill somebody today, and indiscriminately driving down the street and shooting Iraqis, and nothing is ever done against these mercenary murderers. Have you heard those stories, Jack?
Oh, my goodness, yes. So many of them, brother. We had a sergeant, the same one told us about the mortaring of the house that didn't come off, and the captain told him to do it, and they tried, but the mortar didn't work, and the family was saved. But then that same sergeant told us that when he first got there, he was on night patrol, And he first night he was there, he went to get in the APC, or maybe he said Humvee, I forget which it was, but it was filled with shovels. And he asked the other guys on patrol with him, what's all these shovels doing in here? He says, well, when we drive down the street, we shoot the people we see along the road, and then we back up and we throw the shovels out so that when they're found in the morning, people will believe they were planting IEDs in the ground. And he was appalled at that because, these people were human, you know, and they were just walking down the street and they would shoot them. And then we had a SEAL team member tell us, who returned, he'd never seen anything like it because he'd been in the SEALs about 20 years. And when he was in other countries like Panama and others, when they would go in and clear a house or a building, they would take the people out, the men, women, and children, and they would put these plastic ties around their hands behind their backs and lead them out and have them kneel down on the ground. And after they cleared the house, they'd let the men, women, and children go back in the house. But now, he says, in Baghdad, they go in to clear the house, and they're told to put a double tap in the house, in the head of everybody, men, women, and children. They go into a room and find a man, woman, and children, or children hiding in a corner. They go up and put two rounds in their head, each one of them, and then that's how they clear the rooms, and then they go to the next room, and they put double tap in their head. And he said he'd never seen anything like it before. It really upset him because it was as if these people weren't human at all, you know. And so we've had so many reports. We've had, like I said, 7 or 8 soldiers come back, and most of them are mentally messed up because they can't get out of their head. They have horrible nights of trying to sleep, wake up sweating, and having nightmares about women and children and men they were executed. And so it's really a sad story, brother, that when I was in during the Vietnam War, man, if you killed a man, woman, or child that was not a combatant, you were up on charges, you know, and you were in serious trouble. But not today. There's something much different about now that we're in these Arab countries, that our soldiers are being told that, you know, just to kill these people.
Are they told that they can, or are they ordered to do it?
They're ordered to do it. Yeah, they're ordered to follow rules and orders, and that's the process over there. And so then you have your private contractors that do things. I have an article here that was sent to me by, we had three, in about the space of a year and a half, we had three PSYOPs agents get a hold of us here.
Now, by PSYOPs, you mean the psychological operations unit?
Yeah, agents for the military. And we have one here in our latest newsletter where he's talking about the PSYOPs agents are there, and they do things that, some things are pretty nasty. You know, if Bush wants some intel reports that says that Iran is bringing armaments into Iraq or bombs into Iraq or training Iraqis to kill Americans, they manufacture all this stuff. It's right here in his letter. He says, we manufacture these phony intel reports for the president, and we manufacture phony DVDs and audio recordings of individuals. Phony ones, you know, and he told me right here, I'm looking at his letter to me, he says, using new computer technology, Officer Jack, and taking a video and a voice print of you, Officer McLam, in just a couple of hours, we agents can have you on TV, dancing on a pile of dead Catholic nuns, with you shouting that you have just purchased 100 WMDs from the Boy Scouts of America. He says, you name it, we can create it. And it's quite a letter. He's exposing all of this. Of course, he's just retiring after 20-some years in the PSYOPs. And he says he just doesn't like it anymore. It's terrible. But what he says is, there are certain things that PSYOPs agents won't do. And so that's when the president brings in these 120,000, he told me, private contractors, which he says are from 40 different nations' special forces, guys from 40 different nations that are working for $100,000 a year that our government's paying them to do the things that these PSYOPs agents won't do. Like I say, they've told us that they go and they dress up as Sunnis and go blow up a Shiite mosque and kill a bunch of people or drive a bomb in a vehicle down into a Shiite neighborhood and blow them up, 100 of them, 100 people, drive it down to a shopping area, get out of it and leave and blow them up, and then they go back and dress as Sunnis and go blow up the Shiite neighborhoods or vice versa, go blow up the and keep this civil war going. And he says our guys won't do this, and so they hire these private contractors in Blackwater and other agencies there to do these deeds to keep the civil war going, or to chop the heads off of and torture certain people, and our PSYOPs agents won't do it. Most of them say no to it, you know. So it's a sick war, brother, and it's nothing like Americans are used to, and many of our Americans are coming home. We're not like that. We're not built to do those kind of things or even see our government paying to have these things done, and it's really messing up a lot of our troops.
Well, now,
psychologically.
Because Donald Rumsfeld testified before, you know, before Congressman Waxman's committee recently, you know, when asked if there was a conspiracy behind the murder of Pat Tillman, he said, "Well, certainly I'm not part of a conspiracy." And then referring to the generals sitting there next to him, General Myers was one, and he said, "These are honorable men too. They wouldn't be part of a conspiracy, part of a cover up of the, the accidental killing of Corporal Tillman." Of course, that wasn't an accidental killing. That was a murder.
And
one interesting thing about the hearings is nobody ever asks who put the 3 bullet rounds in his forehead. They were probably standing 10 yards away. They knew it was an American soldier. They put 3 bullet wounds into his forehead, then several other shots into his body. The military pathologist who saw the body said, "This is a murder. We wanted an open investigation." They were not allowed to. And the question is, you know, who killed Pat Tillman, and who covered up for it? Because they said they cut off communication with the unit. All the men in the unit were threatened if they ever talked about what happened. And none of our congressional committees have called the men who were there at the time and asked them what really happened. Who killed Pat Tillman, and why is the government covering up for the murderer? That's the question. And if we'd kill our own men, should we be surprised that we would kill others?
Well, we just got a report. You probably saw it, that this is the highest number of suicides this year in Iraq and Afghanistan than ever before. But we've had soldiers tell us that the government is suiciding some of these soldiers, just like Pat Tillman. Kevin Tillman said after his brother died that his brother was going to come home and tell of some things that he saw and participated in that were horrendous there in the Rangers in Afghanistan, and they didn't want him to come home. Kevin Tillman, who's a Ranger with his brother, says that they murdered him because he was going to come home. Now, I saw another report that said that Pat Tillman said he was going to join the anti-war movement when he got home, and so they just executed him. And I've had 2 snipers, friends of mine that are snipers, that told me it was impossible to use an M16 on a man standing up that gives 3 bursts of fire when you put it on select. For 3 bursts of fire, you shoot, it fires 3 times. But they said it would be impossible to hit all shots in the forehead, that they believe it was 2 snipers working together that killed Tillman. Well, they believe that's the only way it could have happened.
Well, do you have any way of getting hold of the brother or the family?
We've tried, and we haven't had any success yet. We're keeping on trying, though, Dr. Stan.
And if you ever get
hold of him, have Kevin on, because he probably knows a lot more
right
now
back
than what he did.
Back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jack McLam. Of course, Kevin was Pat Tillman's brother. Is he out of the military now? Do you know?
I haven't heard. He was in the military, of course, at that time there with his brother. And so I don't know. I just don't. I think they joined together, and they hadn't been in that long. So I would say he's probably still in the military, would be my guess.
Well, I think his life is probably in danger because
yeah.
he's been very outspoken and critical
of
our government, and that's a very dangerous thing to do, especially in these days.
Yeah, we lost, as I told you before, we lost a wonderful Army specialist, Elisa Peterson, 27 years old, a good Mormon girl who had a very high moral code, according to her family, from Flagstaff, Arizona, who went over to serve in the 101st Airborne, and she was an Arabic-speaking interpreter. And when she got over there, they turned her into an interrogator, and she was in the prison there at the air base in Talifar and in northwestern Iraq. And the second night she was there, she quit. She up and says, "You're torturing these people. I'm not going to be a part of it. I quit." And they put her on gate guard duty then, and she ended up the next day or two, I forget if it was one day or 2 days, but they say she committed suicide by shooting herself with her own service rifle and killed herself. So that ended any testimony she might give when she got back stateside. So I've heard from other soldiers that very mysterious deaths are occurring, suicides are occurring with some of the soldiers that have had other complaints about being given orders to kill men, women, and children, and so forth, and they make the mistake of opening their mouth over there instead of keeping it to themselves and coming back, because Brother Stan, they couldn't believe their own government would set them up and murder them over there. You know, of course they would say, "Hey, I'm not participating in this, not going to do that." Next thing they know, surprise, surprise, they're dead. And so it's a very evil government we have, as your listeners know, of course, and we have followed many of them and believe that truly, at the very top, that Satan is their leader and their god, and it sure shows in the things that are happening to people, both in this country and other countries, when they stand up against these evil criminals that are running our government today, and poor military people, you know, I went in at 17 and signed up to go to Vietnam and leave my country when they said I had to go kill little Oriental people to save America. And I didn't know anything at 17. I figured that I was going to go serve my country and protect America. Well, there was no protecting America. It had nothing to do with protecting America. We were working then for these international criminal cabal, and the soldiers are serving them right now over there in the Middle East. So it's sad, but that's what our soldiers, many of them don't know, but a lot of them are waking up. My son's a major in the Army, and he's waking up to a lot of this stuff. When he was having lunch with the general who ran Abu Ghraib prison and found out that she was being blamed for everything that happened over there, Perskinsky, or what was her name? Anyway, General Kerpinski, I think that was it, Kerpinski. My son's a major in the Army, and he was over there, and he had lunch with her, and she was nervous because...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jack has simply been talking about what his son had lunch with the Brigadier General, who was the commander of Abu Ghraib prison. And, of course, she was set up as the fall person. She didn't even know what was going on. Basically, the orders were being given for the NSA, the National Security Agency, the CIA, and, of course, this whole idea of torture went right up into the Pentagon itself.
Right.
And, of course, they brought in a Philippine Major General, Tacuba, I think was his name, and he was ordered to investigate, and then he was told, off the record, that if he told the truth, it would end his career. And he said, you know, he told Seymour Hersh, and Seymour Hersh wrote a wonderful article in the New Yorker, and the general said, "I knew that, you know, if I told the truth, it would end my military career, and if I lied, and I was found out, would end my military career. So I decided to tell the truth. I destroyed my career, but you know, the it was very obvious that everything was a lie, and it went right up to Rumsfeld, who has officially denied he had any knowledge of torture as the president. But they did. They knew exactly what they were doing. But they can't let the American people know that. And everybody should pull out that article by Seymour Hersh, wrote about Major General Tsushima, who, of course, now has been forced into retirement. And what was his crime? He told the truth about the torture being advocated by our president and his administration.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, anyway, we're talking about, of course, the Brigadier General there at the prison, who's having lunch with your son.
Right. Yeah, Karpinski, I think was her name, wasn't it? Janet Karpinski or something.
I can't keep track of them all.
Yeah, but anyway, my son served two tours over there and saw a lot of things, and he's very disillusioned with the military. He's been in almost 20 years now, and I pray that, and I do believe that he's going to get out. When he was over there the second time, you might remember, brother, that his young daughter, 10 years old, my granddaughter, was back with her mama and sisters and brothers there in Heidelberg, Germany. And she had had a child, an older girl, of a colonel there on the base that had molested her. And so they put her in the hands of a psychologist there at the Heidelberg Army Hospital, a man named Dr. Rubies, and for 1 year he molested little Rebecca, my 10-year-old granddaughter, and he molested her for a year, and literally she finally told mom and dad that he said that he would come over to the house if she told and kill and rape her mom, and kill and rape her older sister, and kill her brother if she told. And my son came back. They let him come back. We got him on the air, and they wouldn't let him come back from Iraq to be with his wife, even though his wife found out about this, and the stress made her pass out and throw up on the floor and pass out, and she was in horrible condition along with little Rebecca. And so finally, we raised such Cain about it that they let my son Augie come back. And when he got back, they had circled the wagons around this pedophile doctor at the Army Hospital there in Heidelberg, and came out against my son. They never prosecuted this man, even though I've been, as a cop, I've worked a lot of these assault cases. And when a little child gives you all the details, when she's 10 years old and she's a little Christian girl that always goes to Christian church, and couldn't possibly know the evil words to use and the nasty things that he did to her, that she talked to him about, so that's prima facie evidence that it happened. But the military wouldn't investigate him, and they got mad at my son and ended his career potential. And he went outside the base and got the German police to investigate it. And some pressure was put on the German police, and they backed off. So my son is totally, disenchanted with the military today. He was always a gung-ho officer, and for 20 years, and treated his troops well, and was very good officer, and was looking forward to becoming lieutenant colonel. But of course, now his career is over because he protected his family from the military, and Dr. Rubies is still there molesting children at Heidelberg, Germany Hospital, military children. So, I tell you, brother, it's just a sick world. And my son, we've been through hell with my little granddaughter, Rebecca, with all of her nightmares and all of her problems she's had.
Well, I'll tell you what, there are satanic groups right in the military. It's Colonel General Michael Aquino was a Satanist at the highest levels of our government, and they knew he was a Satanist.
Very true, yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Jack McLam, and we're talking about his efforts to bring out the truth about what's happening to our military. And we have a lot of wonderful people in our military, dedicated people. People are willing to give their life for their country without realizing that there is an element within our country that is inherently evil. They control both political parties. They control the reins of government, and they're using the idealism of our military officers and of our fighting men to destroy not only our nation, but other nations throughout the world. So until people begin to grasp what's really going on, and that there's this dualism, there's one, of course, the idealistic element of our society, and then there's the other that's totally depraved and deceitful. And many times these are the people who get promoted into the ranks of the upper ranks. And, you know, when it finally comes, push comes to shove, why so many of the men who are within the general officer corps will compromise their principles rather than simply say, I'm going to quit because I will not go along with that. And certainly Major General Chishuman, I think that's his name. Anyway, he was the Philippine general who investigated the torture at Abu Ghraib. And he did the right thing. He told the truth and ended his military career as a major general. But at least he could hold his head high. So many of these other generals really are not fit to wear those uniforms.
Yeah, very true, brother. And we have a lot of good soldiers that contact us daily here. Our email went up to about 300 a day now, with soldiers and police officers contacting us, federal, state, and local. And also intel people get a hold of us because they know our publication, we tell the truth and the whole truth, and they have stories to tell. But sadly, so many of them tell us, don't use my name, because I could be killed over here. And it is true. If they start speaking out, the government has gone to great extent to stop the web searching over there. Guys tried to search the web to get Radio Liberty or GCN or one of the other things over there to listen to, and now they've closed down the internet to them to try to keep control over information over there. And but they do get letters out occasionally to us and so forth, and then they come back on leave and they contact us and tell us what's really going on over there.
Okay, you hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here, Jack.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jack McLam with Aid to the Pet News Service, and a newsletter and organization he's been putting, a newsletter he's been putting out for almost 30 years. And Jack is trying to reach the military officers, the military personnel, and certainly the police officers in America with the truth about what's really going on. He's having a tremendous impact, getting 300 emails every day, and of course most of the people within the military are quite afraid to have their name known for fear that they will be killed for telling the truth. But at least they're getting the stories out, and you'll get that in Jack McLam's newsletter. Now, if you have a question for Jack, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Jack, let's go ahead and get your web space and your address out, so if people would like to get and take your newsletter and get your information. And, of course, listen to your radio program, because you have your own radio program, too, don't you?
Oh, yes, 6 times a week on Republic Broadcasting Network and also on GCN, Genesis Communication Network. And so, we're doing all we can as volunteers. This is my 28th year almost volunteering my time to reach our brothers and sisters in uniform. And I'm working about 12, 14 hours a day with what we're doing here, trying to keep up, but we can't, brother. There's so much contact today from our police and soldiers that want to be a part of stopping what's going on in America and in these other nations. and it's just keeping us so busy, we can't, I can't go fishing and hunting up here in the great Rocky Mountains of Idaho because I'm so busy every day, and when I get done, I'm so tired, I hit the bed and read my Bible a few minutes and pass out.
Tell me, how many hours a day are you doing a talk radio?
It takes me about 2 hours a day to do a one-hour program on Genesis Communication Network each night, 5 to 6 Pacific time. And then I have a two-hour show on Sunday, 10 to 12 Pacific time on Republic Broadcasting Network. And that, it's amazing. I thought when I went to Sundays from 10 to 12 that I would lose a lot of listeners, but my gosh, man, the callers are amazing, and more callers than what I have in the evening time on Genesis Communication Network.
I'm
amazing.
So glad. Well, anyway, you know, how can people get in touch with you?
Okay, the easiest way, if they have a computer, I'll tell them both ways. If you have a computer, we have an organization that's an international police and military organization now called Police and Military Against the New World Order. And we have soldiers from and police from about 12 different nations now working with us to try to overthrow the international criminal elite that controls their government, same ones that control ours. And best way to get to me is just go to, rather than looking up Police and Military Against the New World Order, just go to www.jackmclam.com. And Jack McLam, of course, is one word, and you spell my name MC capital LAMB, just like a lamb, LAMB, not clam. Some people say McClam, but it's not a clam, it's a lamb, LAMB. And so you'll pull up my website there, and you'll have our address there and phone number if you'd like to get a hold of us. We want you to get a hold of our publications and get them in the hands of our police and soldiers all over the nation. If you have relatives in the military, send it out to them, or give us the addresses and we'll send them out from Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter here on constitutional issues. And that's the best thing to do. And if you don't have a computer, here's our address. Do you mind if I give it out there?
You go right ahead.
Okay. Here's our address to write to us, folks. If you don't have a computer, just put down Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter, but don't write that down. Put A and A. It's very simple. Just get an envelope out and put a capital A, the and sign, and another capital A. Send that out to HC, like Hotel Charlie, 11, box 357, like the Magnum I carried on duty my whole career, 357 Magnum, and that's Kamiah. K-A-M-I-A-H. That's an Indian name, by the way. Kamiah, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536. Once again, for those that don't have a computer, go to HC11, box 357, Kamiah, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536. And get a copy of our police and military publication and read it, and you'll see that the police and soldiers have a way to talk and to speak out that they don't have any place else. The veterans of foreign wars and the other veterans organizations have all been taken over, and they don't let anybody talk about anything political that's destroying our country. If you do, you get thrown out. I'm a member of the American Legion. I'm a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And believe me, I can't speak about anything political or anything because they don't want your soldiers to be part of trying to take back America.
Amen to that.
Well, veterans organizations have been taken over.
Well, I'm afraid most of our conservative and most of our Christian organizations have been taken over, and they get the ministers back to the White House, the leading ministers in that country, and they
right.
butter them up and tell them how much they love the Lord. They all pray together and hold hands, and then as soon as the Christians are gone, they laugh. And Ed Shortle, in fact, there was one of the fellows who was part of it, David Ho, and he wrote a book about it and how they ridicule Christians back there in the White House, but Of course, then the Christians are so flattered, and they go back to the congregations and say, well, I was just back at the White House, and here's why we've got to go to war with Iran. After all, if we don't kill all those Muslims, they're going to come over here and kill us. That's why we've got to go to war with 1.2 billion Muslims, and that's
right.
The plan.
All over the world.
And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it will end the destruction of America. I mean, we may not agree with the Muslim faith, but if we're Christians, does that mean we have the right to kill them? Well, let's go to Bart, who's calling us from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you. I'll make it quick. Jack, the discussion that you had this week with Alex Jones was extremely sobering and alarming.
Uh-huh.
I spent quite a bit of time thinking about it this week. I've been thinking about it constantly since then. Specifically, the idea that sometime within the next 3 months, the globalist beast government is going to conduct a series of large attacks on Americans in the heartland to bring us all the rest of the way into a police state.
In other words, these will be simply simulated attacks. Pretending it's the terrorists, and really it'll be done by the same people who did 911.
That's right.
False flag attack.
False flag operation.
If this is so, Jack, this is the number one concern I think that we can have. And if you could expand on that a little bit, I'd appreciate it. And I'll just say God bless you, sir, and good health to you and your wife, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, brother. I would ask for prayer for my wife, Angie, because... She's 22 years Army veteran and sick with the Gulf War sickness, and I sure would appreciate some prayer for her. And she's served her country for a long time. I did in Vietnam, and now my son's doing that in the Army. But now we find out, of course, that we never did serve our country. We serve these international criminals, and it's really heartbreaking because we love our servicemen very much and women, too. And feel so bad about us knowing that they're not serving America. They're serving to promote the goals of wealth creation and power for this international criminal cabal. But anyway, what I was talking about earlier this week is that we received an intel report from a high-placed official, which I can't name, which is always the case with these intel reports we get that we're not supposed to have, but he said that it was about 3 months from now when the international criminal elite want to blow up America, and it's going to be something like a Tet offensive, where they blow up 100 places in America like they did in Tet when I was in during the Vietnam War, where they blew up 100 places there in Vietnam all at one time. And they want to hit the National Guard bases, he said, and blow up the National Guard bases in America and destroy them. And then he says there's 15 scenarios of what they want to do in this country to cause the American people, one of them being blowing up school buses with our children in it and our schools with children in it, to cause the American people to be so outraged that they cry out, go kill all the Arabs. And that's exactly what certain people want to do, is kill up all the Arabs in the Middle East. We got an intel report on the bombing coming up of Iran, and it shocked us tremendously because they have cited, they've sent our special forces in there for the last 2 years now, and they've marked 10,000 targets in Iran itself to bomb. And this is not just their nuclear power plants, folks, that are there. Our intel has told us that they have no evidence whatsoever that there's any building of nuclear bombs. This is the intel we've received from the Army. And they say we have no intel whatsoever in the CIA, NSA, that they're building any nuclear bombs at all. It's all nuclear energy, but it's all manufactured, these lies, like they did going into Iraq. And but what he said was that they want to make the American people so afraid that Bush can bring us under military rule and put himself in as president for good and cancel the next election and then get the universal draft through that's sitting in the Congress right now to draft our boys and girls, our young boys and girls, into these wars in the Middle East to take over the whole Middle East. And a bunch of other things, too, that he said, but this is what they've found out. And now, what I must tell people is I want to remind you, I'm a Christian man, and I know Dr. Stan is, too, and many of his listeners, and what we know for sure is God is in control, Dr. Stan. It's not these Antichrist traitors and mass murderers and terrorists that run our government today. They're not in control. God's in control. And just because the Bush crime family and his overlords want to blow up this country in 3 months doesn't mean they're going to carry it off, because we heard from our intel people that Bush wanted to do it last year, and he hadn't been able to put it together yet. So what we're asking all of our listeners on our programs, Dr. Stan, to do is pray like Daniel did in the Bible every night. Pray that Bush and his criminal cronies are confounded, and they're absolutely, their hands are tied, and they're not able to pull off this next false flag bombing of America that's going to be horrendous, going to be at least 10 times, 20 times more people dead, which is what they want, to scare the people to death into letting them do anything they want. And so prayer works. It truly works, and God is listening. And if we all pray together that God will bind their hands, and as David said, if they do not turn from their wicked ways, destroy them with double destruction, is what David said. And we're praying that prayer every night and asking God to give us more time, Dr. Stan, because amazingly, many people across this nation are waking up. Just thousands and thousands a day, we believe, are waking up to who the true enemies of God and liberty are that are running this country. And God is watching this, Dr. Stan, and he probably is very pleased to see that many people waking up, because all your listeners out there, many of your listeners, are activists doing what God told us to do in Psalms 94:16. When he said, and asked all of us out there, he said, who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity? That's Psalms 94:16. And more people are answering, here I am, Lord, use me. And so we're praying to God to give us more time, Lord, because if Bush cancels the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, our First Amendment's gone, Dr. Stan's show's gone, my show's gone, if any of you hand out tracts or CDs or books or anything, you'll be put up against the wall and probably shot under martial law in this country. So don't go by what our intel officer says. Yes, the Bush crime family would love to blow us up again in the next 3 months, but God is in control, and he can stop it. And that's what we're hoping he will do as we continue to awaken more and more of our people, Dr. Stan, with the help of your great listeners out there that are activists and taking tapes of your programs or taking a piece of paper and writing down how they can listen in to Dr. Stan's show and handing it out to people in the grocery line or wherever they're at. I take my newsletters to work or to out with me every day and hand them out to people in the community, and a lot of them are getting back to me saying, wow, I never knew these things are going on. But you got great shows that Dr. Stan puts on that you can get a CD of, folks, and hand out, and I know some of you are doing that. And I can't imagine, Dr. Stan, that God isn't pleased to see what we're trying to do. What do you think?
Well, I think that's why I do what I do, and why my wife helps me, and why certainly the people across America who support our ministry,
right,
I do it, because they realize this is not my battle or your battle, it's God's battle, and we're called to do our best. We're not called to win, but
that's
we're
it.
Called to do our best. Yeah. Well, let's go quickly to Woody, who's patiently waiting here.
Okay.
And again, our guest is Jack McLam, who I've known for many years. He's a man of integrity. And Woody, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I had a question, Dr. Stan. It's not too closely related to your subject tonight, but I would like to ask Jack if he could give me any up-to-date information on retired Colonel Bo Greitz. The reason I ask is since his radio program left the airwaves here in Iowa a couple of years ago, I haven't heard anything about the man. And
I'm interested, too. What about Bo? What's happened to Bo?
Well, strange thing is, his wife, Judy, doesn't like me calling Bo, and she always picks up the phone. And Bo and I used to talk quite a bit, but I haven't talked to him about a year and a half, and I called him here, about 4 months ago on his birthday and wished him a happy birthday, and he never called back. So I don't have any fresh report. Judy, who he married after he divorced Claudia, was my girlfriend for a while, and she doesn't like me talking to Bo because she thinks he and I talk about her, which is not true. But anyway, I have a hard time getting a hold of him now. He's a dear brother of mine, and I just don't know what he's doing. I hope he's still doing his daily radio show, but I don't know if that's even true right now because I haven't talked to him in about
a year. Well, we're going to have to take what do you, anything else you want to ask before we let you go?
I just want to comment that I appreciate Jack's reliance upon prayer in this battle because our God truly wants to answer on our behalf. He wants to be strong for us, and in this time in our country, we certainly need to depend upon him.
Amen to that. Thank you so very much, Woody, and I agree that this is a spiritual battle. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
And let's go to Mike quickly. Mike, we're just about out of time, but do you have a quick question?
Yeah. Given the Iraqis have been watching, the Iranians have been watching the Iraqis get devastated all this time, and we've identified 10,000 targets that we're going to go bomb in Iran. Don't you think that they'd be interested in a preemptive strike on us, like maybe sending some Sunni-looking guys that actually happen to be mercenary contractors to come blow up a few of our churches?
Well, I wouldn't blame them, that's for sure. I truly wouldn't if I thought my nation was going to be bombed 10,000 times, and we calculated it here at our two police and military associations, and being that Iran is one-third the size of the United States, we calculated that if we were bombed, our nation was bombed 10,000 times, it would devastate, kill most of the people in this nation. But if you bomb Iran 10,000 times, almost all the people, men, women, children, are going to be dead. And that's what a lot of people want, that are these neocon Trotskyites that are running our Pentagon and the White House at this time.
Well, so, Mike, I think we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. I would think they would be very foolish to think about a preemptive strike. I would hope that they would think, realize the implications. And the last thing they would want to do would be to give us any sort of a justification for attacking them. I don't think we need it. I think it's going to come. I think that the Bush administration has already made the plans. Let's hope and pray we're wrong.
Yeah, they might just decide they had no choice if they're going to be bombed like that.
But I don't think they're that foolish. God bless. Okay. Bye-bye. And right now, of course, our guest has been Jack McClam. Once again, the Aid and Abet newsletter, what's the address or the way to get a copy of it?
Okay. And Dr. Stan, you were right in your comment to him. I don't think that Ahmadinejad is that stupid to bomb America. I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway, to contact us, folks, go to www.jackmclam.com, spelled M-C, capital L-A-M-B, or if you don't have a computer, write to us at ANA, that's for Aid and Abet, ANA, box HC11, I like Hotel Charlie 11, box 357, KAMI, K-A-M-I-A-H. Idaho, 83536.
Well, Jack, one more time, get that address out to write to.
Okay, HC11, like Hotel Charlie 11, box 357, KAMIH, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536. And remember, Dr. Stan, all your listeners out there, we're all volunteers here for 27 years. So if you order something, please send a little money, because you can bankrupt us if we get too many orders and nobody sends any shekels with it.
Well, you go ahead and support Jack. He's doing a great job. Thanks so very much for being with us, Jack. And
thank you, brother.
Comes up, always give us a call. We'd love to get you on.
Well, listen, our brothers and sisters here admire you so much, Dr. Stan. Thanks for all you do for all of our children and grandchildren, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, too, Papa.
God bless you.
All right. That was certainly Jack McLamon, and a good man, a good friend. We've been to meetings together, shared rooms, and wept together, and talked together, and laughed together, and I'm proud to call Jack McLamon my friend. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, this is the time when I have to remind you Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, why, of course, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Or if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, I'd like to get it on a regular basis. Again, the number 1-800-544-8927. Let me point out that we are involved in a spiritual battle. There are spiritual forces at work in this battle, and you can't understand anything going on unless you understand that there is a spiritual dimension where the real battle is being fought. And, of course, you'll certainly want to hear my talk. It's entitled Forbidden Secret, and you can get the video or the DVD. You get the syllabus. I think you don't have to get the syllabus, but it will help you to understand what's going on. You want to get our 14th set on the supernatural. And there's a book that goes with that called The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. You want to get the book Hostage to the Devil in the 14th set that goes with that, entitled The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, because he wrote Hostage to the Devil. You want to get the DVD, The Atlantis Connection. It's a talk that Chris Pinto gave when he was here in the Monterey Bay area at our seminar last year. And, of course, if you want to get the book, it's on our special request-only website. It's called The Secret Destiny of America. It's written by a man who was a Satanist. His name was Manly P. Hall, one of the leading Masonic philosophers of the last century. In fact, the greatest Masonic philosopher of all time. And, of course, his book, The Secret Destiny of America, actually tells us that there have been secret societies been working to bring about world democracy for thousands of years. And that's really what this is all about. And this is why we went to the First World War, to make the world safe for democracy. And why are we fighting in the Middle East today? Why, for democracy? But America's a republic. We're not a democracy. Why would we be fighting for democracy? Because we're not fighting for American values, but for the values of another group, another spiritual force. Well, certainly my talk on the world revolution goes right along with that, and there you'll see my interview with Ambassador Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution, and he will tell you how we intentionally brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing he was a communist. And of course, this is simply part of the world revolution. If you want to get a book on this, it's called Fire in the Minds of Men, written by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, was a member of the CFR. And, of course, you need to understand that there are spiritual forces at work. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America and for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.